Get ready. It's time to tee it up with Keith Jones.
Coming up on today's show, we turn to the mental side of the game as we welcome our mental guru, Dr. Bob Winters. So stay tuned and get ready as you tee it up with Keith Jones. Welcome to the show. So glad you'd be along. Thanks for joining us this week. And joining this week as a guest is one of our go-to guys, our mental guru. So much golf going on, and people have talked about it to me for years. You do golf 52 weeks a year? Of course I do, because there's always something to talk about. Now, obviously, we're getting late in the season or early in the season, depending on if you're following the PGA Tour or not. But that's something we'll talk about a little bit later. Let's first welcome our mental guru, Dr. Bob Winters, back to tee up with Keith Jones. Doc, thanks for making time, as always.
Keith, it's always great to be on your golf show, and always a lot of great, you know, insight by you and a lot of great discussion. So I'm glad to be on with you today.
Well, I thank you so much for that. In the mental side, and I was talking to Bob Toski, who's a regular contributor to this show as well. I was talking to him a couple weeks ago, and he was saying when he was coming up and being the leading money winner on the PGA Tour, along with the likes of Byron Nelson, et cetera, the greats of the game, those guys were their own psychologists, you know, and a lot of times the 19th hole meant just that. They got together and the camaraderie was building and such, and they'd help each other with the golf game. So they were their own sports psychologists, if you will, golf psychologists. Where did the industry or that part of a profession take off?
Well, I think it's interesting that you mention the mouse, Bob Toski, who has been, you know, a longtime friend. I mean, pound for pound, Bob Toski could probably hit the golf ball further than almost any individual alive. The only person I think, probably smaller in stature, that could actually hit it out with him relative to his pound per yardage ratio would probably be Chi-Chi Rodriguez. I mean, those two really learned how to thrust their total body into the shot. And you're absolutely correct. In the older days, and in the days around the 40s and 50s and 60s, mainly golfers, sort of the Hogan-esque, their secret, you know, they found it in the dirt. But all of them, and I talk about this in my book, Mistake-Free Golf, First Aid for Your Golfing Brain, with, you know, one Walter Zimbriskie, the former iron worker who turned, you know, Champions Tour player and won several times, won about $4 million on the Champions Tour. When I asked him, you know, really what his greatest mental mistake was, he said to me, I mean, almost verbatim, he said, "Hell," he goes, I never thought about that sort of stuff you're talking about. The stuff you guys talk about today," he goes, "we didn't have sports psychologists back then." He goes, "we had our mental tips. We knew what we had to say to ourselves. We knew that if it was going to be, it had to start with me. And nobody else is going to give us any secrets because everybody kept their secrets to themselves. Nobody wanted to divulge any of their, you know, great insight, emotional or mental information. So you had to kind of dig it out on your own." And I think it was Ben Hogan who said his wife, Valerie, was his best sports psychologist. I mean, when he laid his head down on the pillow, you know, her gentle words to him as they were laying in bed together, you know, was sort of soothing comfort. And I think Barbara Nicklaus was the same way for Jack. I think Winnie and Palmer was the same for Arnold. Dal Finsterwald and his wife. I think as you hear some of the greats of the 40s, 50s, and 60s, you know, that's really what they did. They sort of talked about it, you know, not with anybody, but with their significant other or spouse or maybe their caddy. But you didn't hear them go out and start, you know, looking at, you know, books and start, you know, sort of spouting off all this information. I remember, you know, talking with the great Laura Ball, and doing some wonderful work with her, you know, a few years ago. And she said when she was coming up playing the LPGA Tour, No one talked about this stuff because no one wanted to divulge their secrets. So I really happen to believe it probably started with people like myself and people like Dr. Bob Rotella back in the 70s and early 80s. And I remember I actually had done, you know, my master's thesis on the effects anxiety and stress have upon modern golf competition. I mean, and that's kind of a play on words because anxiety and stress have always had an effect, just not on modern golf competition, but on any type of golf competition ever since, you know, young and old Tom Morris have actually played the game. Stress and anxiety have always played a big part in this game. So I'm really thinking it really took off. And Keith, if you remember this in your growing up, there was a wonderful contributing author, writer. His name was Dr. David Morley, mm-hmm. who had actually written a few articles for Golf Digest and talking about the psychological fear, the psychological hazards, the fear of not hitting it big, the fear of getting the ball over the bunker, over the water, the fear of, you know, playing in front of people. So he gave a nice little treatise on that in Golf Digest a couple of issues. And I remember reading those back in 1975, 76, because I used, you know, a lot of that information as sort of a reference material for, you know, my master's thesis. And so I did a lot of interviews over, you know, the time of the next couple of years to do that master's. But he was one of the first. And then there was Maxwell Maltz, the famous plastic surgeon, Dr. Maxwell Maltz, who talked about psycho-cybernetics. And Dave Stockton, back, you know, when he was playing in the PGA Tour, was really a big proponent of that book, talking about the mind and servo mechanisms and always taking your mind where you want it to go. So if you want to talk about really where all this mental game stuff came, it came from Dr. David Morley, it came from like Dr. Maxwell Maltz, and then people like, you know, Dr. Bob Rotella, who was really with the Golf Digest schools, with, you know, Bob Toski and Sam Snead, and then people like myself who had actually studied with Bob and several others. But many of us were out there in the 1970s and 1980s, and we've actually sort of developed this craft, the wonderful field of sports psychology. It's now recognized as Division 47 of the American Psychological Association. There are several wonderful sports psychology nationally accredited organizations, and it's really a very booming sports science. But I think almost every athlete in every sport realizes how important it is to have great mind, great emotions, great mindsets, great mood sets. And if you aren't, and if you aren't using your mind effectively, and your head is in the wrong place, I don't care how good your physical talent or your swing proficiency is, you will always be playing with like a half-empty glass. You're never really going to be playing with a full deck, and you'll always be limiting your true potential.
Well, you know, I thought about it for a number of years about going to get my master's, and I can never come up. I always hear these microbiologist things and everything else for a topic, which are fascinating and such. But if I had known you could do a master's thesis on stress in the golf swing, I would have been all over that. Well, you're a little older than me, but maybe a long, long time ago. So I still might consider going back and getting my master's now, knowing that you could actually do something around golf. So that's pretty insightful. I appreciate that. But the one thing you did say early on in this segment, and I appreciate it, and it's still true to this day, it starts with me, and, you know, yours truly, but it starts with me. And I thought that was just kind of a profound statement when you repeated it, that was told to you when those guys didn't have a sports psychologist back in the 40s, 50s, and 60s.
Well, it's amazing because, you know, going through the collegiate college program, you know, I played golf for a wonderful school, Ball State University. I was a Ball State University Cardinal. I was a walk-on to the team and eventually, you know, worked my way into starting lineup, became, you know, multiple letterman, captain my senior year, and kind of propelled me into my professional career. But one of the things I learned, you know, I learned the Greek alphabet back in college, and obviously it starts off with A, the alpha, and then, you know, the omega, the last letter of the Greek alphabet. And I've always found that, you know, that's really what it's all about in golf. It's the alpha and the omega. If it is to be, it has to begin and end with me. And me, meaning I'm in control of my brain, of my body, of my thoughts, my attitude, my action. And when I'm in control of that, that gives me a foundation to play some great golf. And me, I've just worked on this past year. Me is an acronym for managing expectations. Managing my expectations, because one of the greatest mental errors we have, Keith, is that we go out and we mismanage our expectations, or we set our expectations way too high, too unrealistic. And what always happens, our results don't equal or match those expectations, and we always walk away frustrated, angry, disappointed, and depressed. So that's sort of something I found out. The alpha and the omega, if it is to be, it has to begin and end with me. And every golfer who they say, wow, that person's kind of selfish, well, that selfishness is them focusing on what they need in order to give themselves the very best chance for that one person, that individual, to be successful.
Once again, Doc, as we're talking to Dr. Bob Winters on TW Keith Jones, once again, Doc, you are an astute individual, because that's exactly what people go through every time. Their expectations are out there. They play a bad round of golf. It gets to them. We're losing golfers by the millions in this game. We're trying to figure out ways to keep them. And the mental part of it really leaks in, because it's not just mentally how you play during the round, it's how your brain digests what you do during the round, and it can be a very negative thing for the golfer, especially after his round when he's looking back and saying, oh, why am I still playing this game?
You know, it's important. I think Oprah Winfrey asked a question years ago, and, you know, now we've come full circle, Keith. You know, the Keith Jones, Tee It Up with Keith Jones, now Dr. Winters is starting to style Oprah Winfrey. So we have come full circle right back to Oprah, okay? So the point she asked years ago to many of her wonderful celebrity interviews, and something she always asked of herself, and I had always thought about this many, many years ago, she always asks people, well, what is it that you want? What is it that you want out of your life? Where is it that you want to go? And are you happy? I mean, these are big philosophical questions. And one of the things I'm always asking, you know, my athletes when they come in to see me is, what is it that you want? What is it that you want to do with your game? And I think so many times when we go to the golf course, I think we have to have, you know, everyone, whether you're a 25 handicap, a single handicap, or a tour professional, what is it that you want to do today? What is it that you want out of your game? What is it that you can give yourself that's going to make you enjoy this day? Or, you know, is it something, you know, so simple? Or is there something very specific? So just being able to answer that question, what is it that I want to do today? Because if you ask people that, I say, what do you want to do today? Most people will say, well, I want to win. I want to shoot a low score. Okay, you know, those are good, but what is it that you really would like to do, and what's going to enable you to do that, you know, today? What is going to allow that process to be elicited so the good scores, the good results, and the final outcome will come to you? What is it that you have to do? So it sort of starts with this, what is it that you want? And what is it that you have to do? And what are you willing to do in order to get what it is that you want?
With Dr. Bob Winters this hour, working on a mental blueprint. We'll be back to continue after this break. And we're back with Dr. Bob Winters, who's spending the hour with us. We've got him between students and instruction and travel and everything else that he does so well. Dr. Hare to all his friends. And Hare, the pompadour is looking really good these days, right, Doc? I know I've seen some pictures recently on the internet, but...
Well, it's still there. You know, we're still working it, you know, Keith. So it's good. You know, so how's yours?
It's never going to be as good. It's just like my golf game. It's never going to be as good as yours. My sports psychology, never going to be as good as you. I mean, I just live in the shadow of Dr. Bob Winters, and as much as I aspire every day, I'm never going to be there. I just can't get there. It's not going to happen.
It's a funny thing you say that, because people you know, it's sort of become kind of a trademark, if you will. But it is funny, because I have a lot of my players, when I'm out, you know, on tour, or I'm following them in a tournament, collegiate tournament or junior tournament or whoever, and sometimes I may wear a baseball cap. And it's amazing how I can almost go, you know, incognito. I can kind of go underground and people won't recognize me. But you know, the moment I take off the hat, you know, there he is, there's Dr. Winters. And I never really want to, you know, make my players do that. I never want to make them, you know, self-conscious when I'm watching them, because I want them to feel like I am supporting them. And I think that's a great thing for every junior golfer and collegiate golfer and young aspiring tour professional to understand, is that when your parents, your sponsors, your coaches come out, gee, you know, don't shy away from them. You know, you should look at them as your biggest fans, your biggest supporters, and you shouldn't feel like you're trying to please or impress them. You should feel like, hey, your good luck charm has showed up, and your biggest fans have shown up. I mean, and then, again, that's another thing about the mental game, because I always talk about golf being mental, it's emotional, and it's physical. It's a combination of all those things. But more than anything, Keith, golf is compartmental, meaning you need to put away and park all of that stuff. Like, I need to worry about other people. I have to please my parents. I've got to impress others. I've got to worry about what my group thinks about me. That's where that compartmental strength becomes very big. And the best players on tour do a really good job of actually parking all of the distractions. And the moment they get inside the ropes, they get on the golf course, it now becomes free and easy, and now they are in a more relaxed, or at least a more comfortable stage, because they know what to expect inside the ropes. And that's why you always, you know, look at players, they go, wow, they're so successful on the golf course, but when they go off the golf course, wow, that's when the real problems start to hit them. Well, it's because they don't have total control. And that's what I keep talking about players, about creating this zone of control and being able to compartmentalize and put away the stuff that takes away from your natural genius or developed genius on the golf course.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because talking on the show recently about just that, if you have a stable home life and other things personally are going well, and certainly in the right direction, then you play better on the golf course. And the prime example is one Eldrick Tiger Woods, because he's never been the same since the fire hydrant / golf club / crash. And we see this time and time again. And even the, you know, Jason Day's family's in a good spot, and Jason's in a good spot, but Jason Bowe not so much. And you know, different Jasons have struggled over the year, one of them going through divorce and such. And it makes a big difference when you get there and you tee it up. I don't know what it is. I don't know specifically how it comes together in your mind. I think it's very, very mental. It must be. But there's this peace of mind where you can compartmentalize and create that zone you're talking about when you're playing golf.
Well, I think, you know, in talking with wonderful World Golf Hall of Fame member Marlene Stewart Street, who's won, what, almost 20 national championships across the world, she asked me one time what makes me happy. And, you know, I put the onus of responsibility back on her, and I said, what makes you happy? And if you heard her response, Keith, it was very telling. She said, I love the travel. I love the competition. I love the golf. I love, you know, just playing with other girls. I just love seeing all these different countries and the different grasses. She goes, it just makes me happy to be playing competitive golf. And so she said to me, she goes, that's sort of really where my mind is. If I'm happy, if I'm a happy person, happy inside, outside, I'll play happy golf.
Well, we're happy to have Dr. Bob Winters on this hour, heading to the bottom of the hour and back to continue the show and work on that blueprint with the Dr. Hare, Dr. Bob Winters.
Hi, this is John O'Hurley reminding you you're listening to Tee It Up with Keith Jones. I haven't been this excited since I discovered I couldn't lick my elbow.
The Dalai Lama. So I'm on a first tee with him. I give him the driver. He hauls off and whacks one. Big hitter.
The Lama.
Long. Into a 10,000 foot crevice right at the base of this glacier. You know what the Lama says? Gunga Galunga. Gunga, Gunga Galunga.
And we are back to start the second half hour of the show, joined this hour by Dr. Bob Winters, our mental guru. Hopefully he's yours. Man is great, whether he's on the course, off the course, if you read his books, whatever you do. That's why we appreciate him. Actually, we've had Dr. Bob on this show for a lot of years, and he's become a good friend, and he's a great contributor, and we're happy to have him on, as always. And I'd like to check in with our mental guru, I don't know, about every 4, 5, 6 weeks, whenever we can make the time, and we're making the time this week. So soak it all in. Write it down. If you're driving, don't write it down. But if you're playing long and home, definitely write stuff down, because Dr. Bob is full of insight. And every time we have you on the show, Doc, it seems like something else becomes insightful. And it's just you must be just you're no wonder your hair is so big, so tall. You have so much in that head of yours. It just pushes the hair right up to the ceiling. That's what
pretty,
it is.
Yeah. Pretty good brain fertilizer there. But I wanted to kind of finish off that last segment there, Keith, because I was talking about Hall of Famer Marlene Stewart Street, talking about being happy. And she was just this happy soul. And we're talking about, you know, being happy off the golf course, being happier even on the golf course. And sitting down with Lydia Ko about a month and a half ago, before, you know, she became the youngest winner ever of a major championship. And I asked her, I said, what's one of the secrets that you really always carry with you? And she said, well, I really don't know. She goes, I just love to be out there playing golf. And she goes, I guess I'm happy. And happiness is such a fleeting concept for so many people. I mean, it's hard to say, yeah, I am consistently happy. I mean, happiness isn't something that you plan to say, okay, I plan to be happy today. But it's just kind of a foundation of loving the game, loving yourself, loving what you do, and finding a real passion for that. And that sort of makes, you know, her happy. And I believe that's one of the key ingredients for her these last 2 to 3 years, coming from this junior player to this world champion junior player to being on the LPGA Tour and winning on the LPGA Tour and winning major championships. It's this whole notion of being happy, being secure, knowing this is what I do, and it may not last forever, but by golly, I'm going to enjoy the moment right now. And I think for a lot of us, I think we have to kind of take a real good look at that. And, you know, this whole movement now, we're not talking about sports psychology. We're talking about the movement of optimism and positive psychology. Looking at, you know, for years, psychology has always looked at sort of this negative mental health model. What makes people upset? You know, all the different phobias. What holds them back? Now this whole new Dr. Martin Seligman and this learned optimism, this whole positive psychology movement is looking at what makes people successful, what makes them happy, what gives them a sense of well-being. And, you know, we're doing that same thing, you know, in the world of golf and other sports. And what you find over and over again, Keith, is that every great athlete says almost the same thing. It's enjoyable. I love it. I feel, you know, it's my destiny to get to the top. I mean, they almost all talk like that. But some of them say, I didn't really plan you know, on, you know, being at the top. I just love it so much. I just happen to end up here. So it's sort of like, you know, okay, what comes first, the chicken or the egg? But what I do understand what comes first is the passion, it's the enthusiasm, and it's the willingness to do whatever it takes to get to the top. And if you're happy in what you're doing, then, you know, that's just really one of the secrets to life. And we've always said that. I think it was Sylvester Stallone who said, you know, I love what I do. I would do what I do right now for nothing. And, you know, like everybody who's a success, it's taken them anywhere from 10 to 15 years to become this overnight success. And, you know, pretty much the same is true in golf, except it may not take that many years, but it does take many years of mastery and hard work to develop this unbelievable craft. But if you just love to go out and play, you know, that's becoming masterful. That's becoming masterful at the art of play, to know what makes you happy. This is what I enjoy to do. And if you do that and go out that with sort of that kind of wonderful, lighthearted attitude, it's amazing how the good scores, the good results, and the good days start, you know, to actually add up. And it's a wonderful feeling.
Well, so you experienced it firsthand. How often do your students experience it? And what's the tell on that? How do you know that they are becoming masterful at the art?
Well, I think when we start talking about confidence, I mean, if you look at confidence and looking at it now for about the past 35, 40 years, is that confidence, there's many different streams of confidence, you know, and on the other side of confidence is anxiety and doubt. So when you start talking about confidence, you also have to look at the dark side of confidence. It's you know, its enemy, its cousin, and that is anxiety and fear and doubt. And what you usually find is that when people are playing and having fun, is that they're really leaning more towards playing with a lot of confidence, a lot more emotional freedom. And if they're doing that and they're practicing in the same way, they develop something we call competence. And it transforms into movement confidence, which transforms into performance confidence, which transfers into success. And the residue of all that success is really what we call total efficacy or total self-confidence. But there's a lot of different, you know, confidence levels out there. Just not the general belief that I know I can do it. It's being able to do it consistently every day in certain situations, and that result is reliable. That's real confidence. And when people say, I know I can do it, that's when you have mastery. And it doesn't, you know, go off like a light bulb, but you just start to develop it. You just start to have, you know, your good days are even better. Your bad days just aren't that bad. That's when you know you've actually mastered something.
Wow. As we're Dr. Bob Winters this hour on Teed Up with Keith Jones and getting very in-depth about a lot of stuff. And I think it's that way, not just in golf, but in life and in business and in anything you do, whether it's music or what have you.
Oh, I think so. I think when we start talking about, you know, some of these different books that have been written, you know, talent is overrated, you know, the talent game. We always talk about, you know, outliers and Malcolm Gladwell and the 10,000 hour effect, you know, develop mastery. Well, it takes a long time to create precision and mastery. It really does. And a lot of people say, well, I don't have 10,000 hours to go out and play great golf. I only have 3 or 4 hours. But the thing is that if you use those 2 or 3 hours a week and you use them with full intention, full purposefulness, and you really kind of have like little mini goals, you can really achieve quite a bit. And not everyone is really deemed to be a, you know, plus two, you know, amateur player or a tour professional. But boy, you can sure really improve and have a good time when you go out on those Saturday and Sunday Nassau games with your friends. And to me, you know, that was really when I played my best golf, my happiest golf, was when I was playing, you know, with my father and brother and other people. And they were very competitive games because I came from an extremely competitive family. And so we were always playing for blood, It wasn't the money. It wasn't the title. It was the bragging rights, Keith.
Yes.
And so people say, "Wow, you really were a tenacious competitor." I go, "Well, that's how it was in the family. Whether we were playing euchre cards, or we were playing croquet, or we were playing golf. I mean, it was just, this is where you learn competition. You know, you've got to play, you've got to perform." And some people don't take it, you know, that serious. Other people do, but boy, you know, that was what made me happy, you know, being able to compete, have fun, be with the family, be with the friends. And that just transferred into everything I've ever done in my life. So when we start talking about all these mental golf skills, they're really very basic mental sport and mental life skills that transfer into every dimension possible.
All right, but let's talk about our society these days. It doesn't matter if United States or where it is. These days, you get a pat on the back if you just participate. You know, baseball teams get trophies, whether they finish first, they finish last. It's all, you know, it's about the playing. Let's give everybody a big hug and all that kind of stuff. Is that undoing everything that makes people successful?
I think, you know, and this is kind of a nice philosophical question you're asking. That's why I love the game of golf so much. That's why about 80% of my clientele are golfers. But the beauty of the game of golf is it's very black and white. Doesn't mean winner, doesn't mean loser. It means the golf ball either goes in the hole or it stays out. I mean, there is a very defining line of demarcation there. Either, you know, you are successful on this hole and you get the ball in the hole in the stipulated number of strokes, or you don't. I mean, that's why, you know, getting closer to the hole, people feel a lot more pressure, because on a drive, if you think about a drive, you can hit a drive and you can hit an errant drive. Now, you could hit it in the left rough, and you can still recover. You can still hit it, you know, on the green on a par four, or you could hit it up. And if you don't get it on the green, you can actually chip it in or get it close. But if you have a four-foot putt, there's no recovery from that. Either you make it or you miss it. And if you miss it, you've got to go step up, you know, and actually knock it into the hole. So, you know, I love that about the game. There's sort of a brutal or real honesty with the game. Other games where people say, "We just want, you know, you to feel good about, you know, participating." Well, you know, I feel good about participating. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the things that you have to understand is in direct competition sports, such as tennis, I win by making you lose. You know, there has to be a real clear-cut winner and, you know, someone who is the loser. Now, it's one thing to learn how to be a gracious winner, all right, and to understand, you know, the whole thrill and agony, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. But it's also another thing to understand and be gracious in losing, but that you aren't a loser. You put forth a winning effort. Perhaps you just didn't win. And I think that's really what, you know, a lot of people don't really understand about golf, who get the golf from other sports, because they say in golf, "Wow, you don't win very much, you know. We used to win. It used to be 50-50. I used to win if I was playing tennis. Half the time, the other half the time, the other person would win. In golf, gee, you know, that person, you know, hardly ever wins." I mean, Tiger Woods, if we take a look, had one of the greatest winning records, you know, as far as tournaments entered. But he would only win, what, one every five or six tournaments that he entered, which was an unbelievable success rate. So if you think about the people who only win two or three times in their PGA or LPGA career, they are considered unbelievably successful. But they only, you know, were in first place maybe two or three times in their career. The rest of the time, they were in the top 10, top 20, top 30, and had wonderful careers. So to me, I think there's something that's very honest about the game of golf, unlike any other.
Well, not only that, it's challenging. You've got a lot of things, a lot of elements, if you will, in the golf game. I don't mean just the breakdown of the drive and the iron and the putting, that situation. You've got situations where you have to have good management skills and to be able to get around the golf course. And so many shots get thrown away by the recreational players and the professionals when that doesn't happen.
Well, I think if you take a look at tennis, and I think, you know, there's a wonderful commercial now on TV that I have seen, you know, basketball court, tennis court, even, you know, different, you know, baseball diamonds, you know, are fairly much, you know, the same dimension, same length, same, you know, width, height, whatever. Golf course, constantly changing. And not only do you have holes that are constantly changing, you know, day to day by where the superintendent sets up the hole, but the environment. So the golfer has to adapt, you know, not only just to his plasticity and chemistry of his body, but he has to adapt to the environment, to the different situations. He has to adapt to the setup of the golf course. So, I mean, that's the whole point. People say, well, you play the same golf course, you know, for 10 years, you know, don't you get tired of it? Well, if you play different tees and, you know, you play different kind of conditions, it changes every day. It's never the same. And it's not true, and this is something I always have a big beef. You know, everybody says we're playing the same conditions, playing the same golf course. Well, if Keith Jones tees it up at 8 o'clock and Dr. Bob Winters tees it up at 1 o'clock, we may be playing an entirely different set of golf course. You may be playing a sort of a docile, you know, no-win type golf course, and I'm playing a sort of a real blustery, you know, fast golf course. So, you know, even though the setup's the same, the holes are in the same place, we're not playing the same golf course. In fact, the golf course is constantly changing from second to second, minute to minute. So that's why this is, you know, perhaps one of the greatest games ever invented and ever developed, you know, by man and woman. And everybody who plays the game understands this, and that's why the innate challenges in the game are really just not only physical, but they are mental and emotional. And that gives me a great chance to do what I do to help a lot of people.
Yeah, that darn Mother Nature, you know, she's always getting herself in there and messing up people's games. And we see that even in major championships or in any professional round. If weather comes in, and it's great watching, especially the British Open, whether it's in Scotland or Ireland or wherever it is, there's always some sort of wind that kicks in. There's always something that happens environmentally to affect the game. And we see that. So it matters if you go off early or you go off later in the afternoon. It definitely affects your golf game.
Well, I think if you take a look at the best players in the world who have won many, many major championships, and I'll give you a couple, Gary Player and Tom Watson, two of the best have ever played the game. Those two gentlemen, I think, you know, Mickey Wright was another one, you know, on the ladies' side. They were always, you know, those golfers that said, we embrace the tough weather. Get it tough. That separates the real true players from the wannabes. And I remember something that Tom Watson said many years ago. He goes, I never try to fight Mother Nature. I try to play with Mother Nature, meaning a lot of times if there is like a crosswind, instead of him trying to draw or cut a ball into the wind, he would actually play it with the wind and let the wind help the ball and move it towards the target.
With Dr. Bob Winters, back to wrap up the show.
Hey everyone, this is Dr. Greg Rose from TPI, and even when I don't have time to work out, I always make time to tee it up with Keith Jones.
And we are back to wrap up the show. Our final segment coming up with Dr. Bob Winters, our mental guru, Dr. Hare, to his friends, and just an all-around good guy, and a guy who knows his stuff. You know, you've been studying it for years, did your master's thesis on the golf swing, and I mean, you just living big now, Doc. You're getting up to where your hair is. You're living big these days. I do have a question I've wanted to ask you for a while. I have not asked you this question in my recollection ever on this show. Are you in the Ball State Hall of Fame?
I am not in the Ball State Hall of Fame.
Well, that is okay. State. Well, that's just unacceptable. We're going to get a new campaign going and get Dr. Bob Winters in the Ball State Hall of Fame because I can't think of too many football players or other athletes. And, you know, it's not just you go in as a multi-letter winner in the game of golf. I mean, you are a successful alum. And when you're a successful alum, good things happen to you as well, whether you want them or not, as far as your school is concerned.
Well, you know, the wonderful thing is I was very blessed to have been given the chance by a wonderful man who's now, you know, passed. His name was Earl Yustingsmeyer. And Earl did not know me at all, Keith. He didn't know me from Adam or Jane Doe when I walked into his office. And I told him that I would like to play on the Ball State golf team. This is the first day of school. And I will tell this story because I think it's an interesting story and people need to understand the power of dreams and the power of thinking big. And I told his administrator, I said, I would like to see Coach Yustingsmeyer about playing on the team. And she asked who I was, and I said, I'm Bobby Winters, and I come from Galveston, Indiana. And that's where I lived, and Ball State is in Muncie, Indiana. And she said, okay, so you have to understand, Keith, I was about 5'0" and about 92 pounds, and I looked pretty young, I guess. So I asked Coach Yustingsmeyer if I could actually come in and walk on the team because I wasn't recruited. And he said, well, what year are you? And I said, well, I'm a freshman. And he said, well, I'll see you in about 3 or 4 years and see if we can get you here. And I said, no, I'm in 3 or 4 years, I'll be graduated. He goes, well, how old are you? I said, I'm 18. And he said, oh, my God, I thought you were 12 or 13. And so if you weren't confident going in, Keith, you sure as heck weren't confident coming out. So the point of it was, he couldn't believe, you know, how young I was and how little I was. But that sort of, you know, is how I grew up. I grew up learning how to, you know, hit the wedge shots, to putt well. So I really became sort of this little wizard, you know, from 30 and 40 yards in. And then I started learning and growing. I grew in college, grew about 6-7 inches, started hitting the ball another 20, 30, 40 yards further, and sort of worked my way up through the lineup. And then the rest is kind of history. And it was my great fortune to be at Ball State University. And also they had one of the world's best human performance laboratories under Dr. David Kostel. And they still do some unbelievable work there. And it was a great school for teachers and educators. And it was, you know, first started as the Ball State Teachers College, and it became Ball State University years later. And, you know, from there I did my bachelor's, my master's, a lot of support work for my PhD degree that I was fortunate enough to be accepted at the University of Virginia and to work with esteemed people like Dr. Bob Lotella, Dr. Linda Bunker, Dr. Bob Cover, and there was just a host of others. So to be trained by some of the very best in the world of sports psychology and sports vision and motor learning, it's been a wonderful journey since those days at Ball State and since that first, you know, master's thesis. But the one thing I've found, and this is, you know, one thing I'm always, you know, asking of my new athletes who come in to see me, the first thing I always ask them, I said, do you really believe in your talent? And do you believe that you're going to have a good day when you step up on that tee? I said, because that right there is one of the most important assets that any golfer, man, woman, boy, or girl will have. And you have to have this attitude and this permission to give yourself to say, today I'm going to create my day. Whatever happens and whatever comes my way, I'll be able to handle it. I'll move on because I'm playing golf today, and I'm going to play my game, and I'm going to create my day, and I'm not going to let anything or anyone get in my way. And once you have sort of that belief, and that's something that I really help people develop, train, and we do maintenance work on, that right there is probably the single best secret to playing great golf, is that when you step on the tee, you're giving yourself that emotional permission slip to say, this is what I'm going to do today.
Wow, what a way to wrap up the show. The Wizard of the Metal Game, Bobby Winters. The Doc, Dr. Hare, our guest on TW Keith Jones. We're just out of time. Get out there and practice your game. You have to now. Practice. Take your game to the next level, and we will talk to you next week. Take care.